Welcome to the latest episode of The Grower and the Economist. I'm Michelle Klieger, the Economist.
And I'm Peter Kanjoyan, the Grower.
Each week, we team up to tackle the biggest challenges facing small and medium-sized growers. We're one part grower and one part economist, just like your business. Welcome to this episode of The Grower and the Economist. This week, Peter and I are joined by John Laporte, Farm Business Management Educator from Michigan State University, and a recent co-panelist on a greenhouse growers webinar with myself. The point of this webinar that we were on was to talk about pricing. You follow me, you've seen that inflation and higher prices has been a theme in this podcast as well as pretty much everywhere else. And I really liked a lot of the tools and tactics that John brought to the conversation. And so I have invited him here today so that we can pick his brain again and hopefully bring more of those resources to you. So, John, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And Peter's first question always is, can you tell us how you got to be the farm business management educator? And you can start as far back as you want.
Well, my background starts actually, for a lot of people that are probably listening to the podcast, to start out on a farm. I grew up on a small cash crop farm in the southwest area of Michigan, which the southwest area is actually where I cover, so I'm actually getting to cover my home area. From there, I actually worked for USDA as a farm loan officer for a couple years before transitioning into agronomy sales. Did that for about three, almost 4 years, and then got the opportunity to work for Michigan State University in the area of farm business, and using some of that lending experience and a lot of that farm and agronomy background has kind of led to the type of work I do today, where I spend a lot of time working with people on thinking through things like cost of production, business analysis. We do a little bit of work with people in terms of succession planning, and really just trying to understand how fundamentally can we improve our decision making, have a little bit more well-rounded background as we're trying to weigh through how we make our businesses more successful, more sustainable, and of course chasing that always popular and desired profit level that we want to see each year and grow the overall business. So utilizing a lot of that history to get to where I'm at now. Couple different paths to get there, but certainly enjoy the work I do with producers on the business side of things.
Well, thanks for sharing that, John. I'm particularly interested in hearing that you grew up on a farm as I did. And while for our listeners of this episode, there are three of us, I can safely say or accurately say this is an episode of two growers and two economists. You happen to be both.
You often wear many hats when you work in the area of farm business, and I'm kind of proud of the fact that I have maintain a crop advisor certification that I picked up from my days in agronomy. So I try to keep myself in both of those realms, on the farm and the economy side, because there's a lot of interplay between the two. We often like to think about, well, the business is kind of off here on the left side maybe, and the production and so forth is on the right side, but they're really intermingled in there quite a bit, and so I try to keep myself vested in both areas as best as I can.
I guess I'll start by taking the listeners back through the conversation that we had a couple weeks ago, and I will link to the on-demand video of that webinar in the show notes so everybody else can catch up if you're interested in diving deeper. With input prices, especially fertilizer and energy, going up, right? There's this concern that the prices are going to keep going up and going up. And often that leads to hoarding, which one, just makes prices higher. But two, eventually prices are going to peak. It never feels like it in the middle, but eventually the price is going to peak. And you don't know where that is, right? Timing the market is a fool's errand. And in the last few weeks, the price has come down a little bit. It's still well above 2020 prices, but we're off the highs. And so one of my concerns for growers is not buying everything you need in July because you're worried the price is going to keep going up. One, you have a lot of inventory, which is expensive. And two, if the price goes down and the price of your commodities doesn't stay up, you've got a very difficult year ahead of you. On the other side, with all of the shortages, you don't want to have nothing because you need to have enough inputs to make the crop happen. And I've kind of left everybody in this middle of like, stay in the lane, don't get too much or too little. And what I really appreciated how John brought to the conversation a process for thinking through this and deciding at what key points you need to start making decisions. So it's not just how do we avoid catastrophe, but how do we bring that profitability in a marginal step-by-step way?
Yeah, and the concept, the structure of it, actually, it's not really anything new. When you look at certain areas of agriculture, it's kind of borrowing conceptually from what we see a lot from folks that do a lot of grain marketing. And the idea of trying to come up with a marketing plan, well, instead we're kind of thinking reverse of more of a purchasing plan. And what goes in from the grain marketing side is you have a lot of factors like logistics of trying to move a lot of grain. Grain is bulky. There's a lot to move. The timing of the year when you got to move it, you've got to think about the logistics of actually moving. Well, logistics are part of the story on input buying too, because if you've got the opportunity to store anything on farm, you've got to think about getting it on the farm, housing it, taking possession. In some cases, you're looking further out to just try to lock in the availability or at least secure what you're going to have on those inputs. And so conceptually, it kind of borrows from that same framework. And what it starts out with is really kind of having what's your overall plan for buying those inputs. And I kind of push people to think about the things they're already really doing. When you start to think about next year, you're already thinking about from whether you're growing corn and soybeans, or you're working in a greenhouse, or you've got fruit and vegetables, or even on a livestock operation, dairy, beef, whatever. You've got a plan for what your production goals are going to be for next year. And you've kind of got an idea what it is we're going to kind of shoot for from a production level standpoint. And then the rest of it's really starting to pull in these other pieces of, from a cropping standpoint, we think about, well, if we're going to have a yield, we've got to have the nutrients to get to that yield. So what is the total amount we're thinking we're probably going to have? There may be also questions about seed purchases, chemicals, or and not just in terms of pesticides, but even thinking through like plant health type chemistry that you want to be able to secure. And what are those total amounts? And inherently, producers, we think about that kind of stuff. We're always constantly thinking about, I'm going to have so much production, I got to have so much inputs. And really the idea is to take those large amounts and start breaking them down into the smaller kind of what I would call these quantity objectives, where, you know, how much makes sense to maybe think about buying at a time. And then you start to think about, when do I want to buy? What are the opportunities that are out there to buy? And just kind of thinking through your normal year in terms of this idea of when are discounts typically offered for an input. So to give a really good example, seed purchases for most people, a lot of those discounts happen in the fall. And of course, the bigger discounts are going to be the sooner you buy it. But maybe you don't have the cash available to buy right away, or you need to look at financing options. You start to kind of look at when are the opportunities and what are my means to buy, and you start to build a structured plan. And that's where we kind of come back to this concept of what does this overall plan look like? And I kind of break it down into five areas. You've got your plan goals, what you want to achieve overall for the inputs you want to buy. You can be very specific to this. You can focus on a single input. Like Michelle, you mentioned fertilizer. You could build an input plan solely around buying your fertilizer. You could think about a specific type of fertilizer like nitrogen and thinking through, okay, how much do I need? Thinking about how do I want to break up those quantities into maybe these quantity objectives of I want to buy so much at a time. What are my pricing targets, where you got to kind of understand what's going on with the market? And then what are some of those pricing tools out there, like discounts? Maybe there's some financing options. And then ultimately some decision deadlines, which is really important because those kind of help you to ensure that when I get to a certain date on the calendar, I've got to make a decision. Do I go ahead and make that purchase based on, and we tie these back to our pricing targets, where is the price in line with where we want to be by that deadline? If so, yeah, we want to make that purchase. Is the price way out of line from where I'm at when I get to that decision deadline? And maybe I want to wait. Or with inputs, we have this concern. Michelle, you mentioned the availability concern. We kind of get this third area where we say, okay, the price isn't where I want it to be, but maybe it's close enough that given the availability concern, I'm willing to go ahead and make that purchase because I can secure that much of my input and I'm not that far off of my pricing target. And so you kind of think through this from a, what I would call a strategic kind of standpoint when you're in this period of the year in the fall, depending on when your production year is. So if we're thinking about most kind of crop farms, fruit and vegetables, even we're kind of in a fall buying mode. You're kind of in a strategic area where you've got a lot of time to kind of sit through before you get to your main production season, when you're actually dealing with the crops out in the field, out in the orchards, that you can kind of make some decisions and have some leeway. Where once we kind of turn the calendar, we kind of get into the winter, the spring, we kind of get January, February, March, we get to more of a tactical mindset where we've got to be much more responsive to what the market is. So as you alluded to, we're not sitting there having to buy everything all at once and suddenly we're at the mercy of whatever prices may be. And so you kind of go at it from two different angles.
John, you made a really good point that I wanted to emphasize in your earliest comment. You said there's not necessarily anything new here. We're just borrowing from different segments of agriculture or the business world. I think that's a really good point to have made in the beginning so that growers don't feel like they need to learn all kinds of new principles. They just simply need to access things that they've heard already. And Michelle, at this point, I'm going to just bring in and then again, sit back and listen to you guys. You and I got together 3 years ago to talk about supply chain disruption and the pandemic. And John, as Michelle and I have walked our path together as grower and economist, we've arrived at a point this year, our third year into the podcast experience, kind of agreeing that the principle of just in time may be out of time, because we've heard where growers have been putting orders in for containers, pots and flats, over a year in advance, just because they know they have to get it. They have to have it or they can't even start growing the crop. So Michelle, my question or comment at this point, as I listen to the two of you speak is, and you alluded to this in your opening comment, Michelle, that yes, it might have been supply chain disruption that got us talking to each other. Now it's even more complicated because inflation is part of the equation. And it's like these two things that are fighting against one another. All right, if the supply chain is disrupted, I need to buy it as soon as I can. And with fertilizer, John, Michelle and I have talked about an experience I had last spring with a 25-pound bag of hydroponic soluble fertilizer, normally, or for years, been in the $40 range, and I paid $90 for the 25-pound bag. And I wasn't in a position where I could wait for the price to come down. I'd still be waiting. I just had to have it. So I'm not providing any answer. I'm just bringing up a couple of questions that I want to hear the two of you talking about as we meander through our time together. Thank you.
Yeah, that's really good points, because that in essence is the environment that we live in right now, where the idea of the just-in-time worked wonderfully until suddenly we had this huge disruption of we can't get things timely at all. And I've had some conversations with some of our ag retailers around fertilizer, starting to have some of those same conversations around chemistry of what does supply look like. And it's, you know, we're seeing a shift of, well, we feel like we're going to get the supply, but we don't feel confident about when we're going to get the supply. Mm-hmm. And so I've heard and experienced some of the same horror stories you mentioned about people having to buy out a year in advance just to try to get some of those inputs because they got to have them. And so one of the real challenges to this idea of being able to buy and strategically buy, especially this time of year, is kind of understanding that when you're looking at this plan and you're thinking about, I've got to make a decision and secure some of these inputs, you still have to come back and factor to your cost of production and your profitability outlook, because at the end of the day, you still got to try to make a profit when all is said and done. And understanding there may be some things that you've got to tie into from a revenue standpoint, because one of the things we talked about during the panel discussion was about possibly raising prices for what we sell, and or looking for a higher price in the market for what we're going to sell. And that's kind of got to be part of that equation too, where that's kind of, I'd say, kind of moving parallel to these buying decisions. Is there, if you've got a commodity that you're marketing and you can contract, you almost have to kind of look at, is there a way to offset where I secure a certain level of profit? Like from a grain perspective, you can do that, where you can kind of set some contracts out there at this, maybe the same time you're buying some inputs, say, all right, I'm kind of locking in this profit for this amount. I'm maybe buying inputs that kind of relatively match what I'm selling there, to kind of keep yourself in that equilibrium. When you're talking about more of a retail situation, you've got to look at that cost side and what you're going to be selling for, to kind of put yourself in the same position where, okay, I'm going to lock in this much. I need to factor in what I just bought or what I'm going to have to buy into what I'm going to sell my product for, to make sure that I'm not undersetting myself. And that's like another layer of this that you can get into. I think it's important for people to think about that you're kind of looking at both your input buying plan, but then also your sales and marketing plan, to make sure they're running together in parallel to maintain that profit. And that's something we don't typically talk enough about, I think. But I think, and that's maybe something you two have talked maybe more about the last couple of years, especially, where we start to see more of a shift to that mindset. And I think it's really important for that.
Because we're dealing with John at Michigan State, a colleague of yours at Michigan State, a dear friend of mine, Dr. Bridget Behe, spent time with us on the podcast. And her words, if I have it accurately, Michelle, Bridget said to us during that conversation that the period of time that we're in, the climate that we're in, it is our game as growers to lose. If we don't raise prices now, when will we ever raise them? So I'm thrilled that you naturally, John, went from talking about costs and timing your purchasing to laying it on the doorstep of growers have to understand all of these costs, because if the price has to go up, it has to go up, because Michelle has made the point time and again that many growers don't understand their costs and their profitability. And some of them, it would be better for them financially to stop being a grower because they're losing money.
What John said really felt like it aligned with Peter's idea of crop scheduling and thinking about your season in the beginning and when do you start planting and when do you have that succession and how do you line it all up. And so in my head, it was a little bit of, well, if growers are used to thinking about the timing of the season and when they have to start what plants and how they progress, then you could apply that same model to this business. And so I was actually hoping that it wasn't such a huge stretch, that this is a concept that you're comfortable with when you're thinking about growing the plants, and now you're applying it to paying for the plants or paying for the inputs. I know I need X input. So if you needed that one bag, Peter, yes, you absolutely had to pay $90 for it. But today, you know, you got your one bag for $90 and you don't really need more fertilizer until X day. And so now you've got some wiggle room. On the other side, as John was giving his initial comments, he was talking about crop marketing, which is something that I have experience and talk about, but never really thought of it that way either. And so it's this idea that is should be comfortable with growers because they schedule their crops, and should be comfortable with the business people because they're used to marketing plans, but we don't seem to do it on the input side, which is why it applies, in my mind, to every sector of agriculture and possibly every business, but it didn't need to reinvent the wheel. It's, we don't talk about it enough, and maybe people do it, but it's not done formally. And that's where you really get to see, you're probably doing this on some level if you're staying in business and being profitable, but to move to the next level is really having a strong understanding of these numbers.
Yeah, and that's exactly the kind of thought process that I kind of came into as well. The crop planning and, you know, all these things that we inherently do from a producer mindset year in, year out, month in, month out, we're actually doing this process in our head. But you're right, it's actually in some cases formally putting it down. In some cases, it's writing it down and actually kind of writing out the steps and thinking through what do I want to achieve. When do I want to achieve? One of the things that we're going to turn the calendar on here soon in not too long a time frame is we're going to talk about end of year tax planning. And that's a fundamental part of your input purchasing and even your sales and marketing is I want to make sure I'm not paying too much in my income taxes. I want to make sure I'm getting as much money through that tax system as cheaply as possible over time. And so how do we do that? Well, a lot of businesses do that by managing their sales and their input purchases. And so that's inherently part of that crop planning and that those buying or selling decisions as well, that you can kind of factor that in to say, well, you know, if I'm on this side of the calendar year, I know I'm going to need to have some wiggle room to make sure that I can manage my taxes accordingly like I want to. And so you could even set up where, you know, I typically buy a certain dollar amount or I buy a certain amount of bags or tons of product to make sure I've got what I need to manage those taxes. Well, you've kind of already got in your head some of those key steps. You just need to formalize it into a plan of, yeah, these are the things I'm going to do. I'm already planning to do it. Now let's structure the buying process. Or if we're tying in our sales and marketing, our sales and marketing and the price we're going to ask for that product, in along with that, and it's not reinventing the wheel. It's really just kind of bringing together all these processes we're already doing in a way that we can kind of sit down and track, here's where we're at, where do we need to be, how do I get to the next step, what are some of my options along the way to keep me going proactively to where I want to get to.
That it's your farming background and your early time on the family farm that has played a role in the philosophy that you're sharing with us today. And I say that with confidence because I also have walked that same path where growing up on the farm has helped me communicate with growers throughout my career. And it's going to help you with a topic that is hard for growers to grasp because the business management side isn't why they're farming. They want to grow plants. So it's easier for me to sell the philosophy to them about crop scheduling. It's a little more of a challenge for you and Michelle, but boy, you're on the right track, and I enjoy hearing your comments. And Michelle, you weaving your way right into what John is sharing with us, I think double thumbs up.
I think one of the interesting things about, and I had to chuckle when you mentioned that, you know, the business and the management side is not why they got into farming. We often call it amongst members of my team, the non-fun stuff, because the fun stuff's getting out on the farm and working with the animals, working with the plants. I still love going out and driving tractor on our farm. And I'll tell people I got into farming because I wanted to drive tractor. And so, yeah, the management side of things is definitely not why they got into it, but it's what's going to keep them in farming. And so one of the things that I really try to emphasize for producers, and especially our young and our beginning managers that are coming up through the farms, whether they're starting out fresh or they're on a transitional farm where they're working into something established, it's understanding the thought process that went into all those activities, all the fun stuff, the production stuff. There's like a business side to that. There's a fundamental connection to a decision you've got to make that really makes that possible. Or in some cases, that production activity you're doing is going to impact your business decisions, whether it limits or creates new opportunities. So trying to formalize that connection for people that, you know, it doesn't have to be, well, it's just all, you know, this is the business stuff. Well, let's talk about and think about how it ties into the crop planning or the sales, you know, when we go out to sell, because, you know, of all the business things, people like selling things because they like seeing that money come in. So, you know, how do you kind of tie some of those things together to where it's not really that separation of two different things, but really that interconnection to where, okay, I can understand this, I can appreciate this and work with this a little bit better because I'm seeing that connection to the stuff I want to do and that I enjoy doing on the farm. And I'm seeing a lot more of that with some of our producers out there where people are trying to think about what are the things I enjoy? How do I structure my farm around making those decisions and working through some of these plans and processes as I'm doing the things that I enjoy and not feeling like we often talk about having to be stuck behind a computer or at a desk for several hours. Well, how can today's day and age, especially with technology, how can we do some of those things with maybe apps or things on our phone as we're out doing those other activities so that we're tying it all together and making this process a little easier? And I think the same is true for input purchasing. When you're out on the farm and you're out there, again, whether you're talking about being in the field or in a greenhouse or out with the livestock, as you're out there working, you're thinking of this kind of stuff. You're thinking of things you're going to need, things you're going to have to do, and being able to just capture some of that information. So when you do have to sit down and actually maybe sit down and write something out or do something formally behind the not-so-fun desk, you've already done some of that work inherently while you're already thinking about it out in terms of those other activities. And I think that's a big shift that we have in today's agriculture that we didn't have, you know, even 10 years ago. And that makes some of this a little easier and a little bit, I think, more efficient for a lot of our farmers today.
I feel like on the grain marketing side, there are your risk takers that love doing it and are convinced that they're going to be able to get the best price. And then there's the people that don't want anything to do with it and push it all aside. And so the other thing that I like about the dates and the steps, and it becomes a little bit of a choose your own adventure. If I were making this, I've set up the guidelines on what I want to do at a point where I'm not emotional, and then I just follow the plan. So if the price is X on this day, I'm going to buy a certain amount. If it's more, I'm going to buy less, and I'm going to wait until the next day. And so now you're taking some of the gamble out of it for people that don't like that risk. You've planned out your year. You have an idea of how much you're going to need. And maybe it's, well, the price is still too high and I can't grow crops that require so much nitrogen. I do need to switch some beans. I do need to switch something else in. And again, it kind of tells you what to do. And when we plan those things in unemotional times, we make better decisions. And that's another piece of it that's really valuable to me, especially because it's not something that most people outsource. You might have a buying manager depending on your farm or the size, but by and large, it is, as the business owner, something you're going to have to spend a lot of time doing. And it can be scary, which is why I think most people stick their head in the sand and then panic buy or panic don't buy. And this takes away some of that. It adds some science, some structure, some process.
Well, yeah. And especially because as you think about this idea of quantity objectives, you set yourself up with these smaller amounts where, you know, if you were thinking about buying all of your fertilizer all at once, to somebody that's very risk adverse, and an individual's averseness to risk is certainly an important part of any kind of planning. But we talk about it a lot with the grain marketing. That was a really good reference you made there, because that's a fundamental thing in grain marketing is what's your willingness to take on that risk. Well, the same is true with buying the inputs. If you think about these quantity objectives and you kind of think about what quantity am I comfortable with buying at a time, that you spread out that risk and you're doing it much more succinctly where, all right, I'm only buying a little bit at a time, but maybe I give myself a little bit more wiggle room that if the price is so much better than what I was initially expecting it to be, you know, if we continue to see these prices soften, that maybe I'm willing to buy a little bit more than what I originally earmarked, because that's my level of risk comfort or risk adversity, that yeah, I'm comfortable with this price. I'll buy a little bit more because I feel this is a really good opportunity. You build that into your plan, that you spread your risk out, but then at the same time you've got the flexibility to say, I'm going to go a little bit more out because I wasn't expecting to see this price. Market conditions, understanding what's going on in the market is a really important part of that as well, because we have a lot of uncertainty right now, but we have seen some of those prices soften. They're certainly, like you mentioned, Michelle, they're not back to where they were for 2020. That would be fantastic. But as we start to see them continue to soften, you allow yourself that opportunity to kind of see what's going on. We've just had a lot of conversation going on in the news lately about the railways, concerns about, is that going to create a disruption? And I see there's a tentative agreement on that to kind of continue forward, which is great news. And so, you know, but we have to pay attention to those things. And by structuring these quantity objectives in amounts that we're comfortable with, but allowing that flexibility to buy more if we feel it's a good time, we can kind of see what's going on in the market and kind of read what's the indicators out there to say, you know, maybe I want to go ahead and just buy what I've got listed because I think I can capture more at a better price based on what I'm hearing. Or maybe it's the other way where we see a potential concern and this is a really good price. So I'm gonna go a little bit more and secure much more of that input because I built that flexibility into my plan and I'm paying attention to what's going on. And that's where I think it's really important for people to think about in terms of their own comfort level, because it's their plan. I mean, as a producer, you're the one that's going to write the check and buy that input. So you build that plan around what your comfort level is and how much risk you want to take on each time, but also keep that flexibility that if you see a good opportunity, you can allow yourself to take it and be that much better ahead, regardless of what happens 2, 3, 4 months down the line. Hindsight's always 20/20. We've certainly seen years where, and I hear producers talking about it all the time, of the camp that, well, they don't want to buy too much because what if suddenly the prices are really, really good in the spring and they've locked up all this high priced fertilizer? You split up a little bit at a time. You're going to spread that out, that you're not going to be at the high. You're probably not going to be at the low, but if you can be somewhere comfortably in between there, that you're still making a profit, you're achieving success right there.
I got my seed catalog, and if you place your order and if you buy your plugs before October 15th, there's a discount. And so earlier you pointed out that thinking about fall discounts is another opportunity to take advantage. If you know you're going to do this amount, put a certain amount, purchase a certain amount under your fall discount and be able to have comfort in that. And I think that's something that also maybe people don't think about it as much, but they are doing. I'm willing to buy this much in a discount. That's my plan. I'm going to buy a certain amount when it gets closer to season. And then the market did something totally unexpected and I had to go to the local garden center. I had to go to the local ag retailer and take what was available to finish out the season. So we do it all the time, and it's just doing it in other pieces of the business besides the plants for this example.
Yep. And I think that's a great point, because as you think about when some of these discounts are, so growing up in the world of corn and soybeans, a lot of your seed discounts are in the fall. You have a little bit of spillover into, once you get past January, there's a couple month periods, but your best deals are always in the fall. Because part of this conversation becomes, you know, how much cash do I have available and how am I going to prioritize and maximize the use of my cash to secure these inputs? Your best discounts for certain inputs are going to be at certain times of the year. And so you kind of factor that into your overall plan as well of, you know, from a corn and soybean standpoint, or maybe from a plant buying standpoint, you take advantage of those early discounts and you know that's going to lock up a certain amount of cash you've got left, or that you've got available, excuse me. And then what you've got left is then what you're looking to say, how do I structure this to be used to buy more inputs? And if you're talking about cash in terms of whether it's your working capital, or if it's you're getting an operating loan of some kind that you're going to utilize, you kind of funnel into how much cash do I have available to utilize on these other inputs? Because chemistry is certainly going to be a talking point this year, I think a little bit more than what it was last year. It kind of went under the radar compared to fertilizer. Fertilizers can always continue to be the big topic, but we had similar concerns and issues with chemistry. And we may have the same thing with plants and seed. We typically run into that year in and year out where that becomes an issue. Things didn't grow the way we want them to. The production levels weren't there. So we got to change some plans. But you think about tying in your cash and how much am I going to lock in to secure those early discounts, or maybe there's some early financing options out there. Some of these companies do offer some financing where you know, 0% type loan, or they throw in a discount because you took the loan. There's all kinds of things out there that you look at and say, I'm going to lock in my cash to get these items because they're early discounts, and I know that's going to save me some money, keep that cost of production down. With what I've got left, now how do I structure the rest to make sure I'm buying, but also utilizing and maximizing my cash availability as I go forward too?
I want to come at the two of you from perhaps a devil's advocate position for a few minutes. We make no apology, John, that our podcast is aimed at small and medium-sized operations, greenhouses and farms. Most of my career is focused on helping small operations, fellow growers. And so as I'm listening to the discussion today and hearing about the planning and the discipline, let's relate it now to a few of my bigger expenses. I have a colleague at Clemson University, Dr. Jim Faust, and over the years, Jim has done many of cost accounting presentations at conferences, and he has a nice little take on things. He starts out talking, using an analogy of different flavors or types of ice cream. And he'll then say, okay, the first go-through in your cost accounting, consider this Rocky Road ice cream, where there are big chunks of your expenses that you want to account for. And then once you acquire a flavor, a taste for the Rocky Road, you master it, then we're eventually going toward a sorbet, where we understand and smooth out all of the expenses. All right, so it's a natural progression. So let's do a Rocky Road for about 90 seconds. I need containers, pots and flats. I need growing media from SunGrows and Premiers of the world. As a small grower, it's very difficult for me to amass enough of an order to qualify for discounts. So whenever I can put the minimum order together, I do. So for these two categories, guys, I tend to buy all of the pots and containers and order all of my growing mix at one time, as you have said, with the seeds in the fall. So by January, in an ornamental greenhouse, a garden center for spring rush, by January, I've got everything I need, or they're all in the order waiting to be shipped. So that part of it, I don't quite understand how a small grower would play the game that we're telling them we'd like them to learn how to play.
I think that you are doing it a little. You're making sure you hit that minimum order. You could get that material from somewhere else that would be more expensive, or you could not make the minimum order and pay a penalty. So by aggregating your entire purchase in one place, or like we've talked about in the past, your dad bought boxes for 3 years, you might be tying up the capital, but presumably you did it because it offered you the best price or financing or delivery or something else.
I agree with Michelle. I'd say in that example, you're already playing the game. You're already looking at strategizing and breaking up some of that purchasing, because you're taking advantage of you're prioritizing your cash, number one, and you're maximizing the effective use of it by securing a heavily needed input for your operation. And you're also at the same time, you're taking advantage of some discounts and some cash saving, or price saving tools is maybe the phrase to use. And what you've done now is you set up, you've captured a large item where, you know, we talked about fertilizer. Fertilizer is a large item for a lot of farms. Well, for some operations, those containers, that's the large item. And so you're prioritizing what your large items are and then looking at how do I structure the rest of the purchases along the way to, you know, those buying opportunities where I've taken care of this big item. I've still got to get the rest of the little, you know, what I call maybe the littler items. They're still important items, but they're maybe not the large input item that maybe the containers and the medium is. But you're still doing it inherently. You're still thinking along the same thought process. The other thing that you also look at is if you're buying, for example, you have to buy enough to do 3 years worth. In some cases, what you have done is you have secured the cost of that item, that it's not going to go up, it's not going to go down, because you've now got a fixed cost that maybe in most years would be more variable where you would see it go up or down. Now you can focus on, okay, I've secured this one for the next couple years. Now I focus on how do I minimize the other input costs. Again, maximizing the use of my cash to minimize those costs where I can, to where you're looking at, instead of, you set yourself up for a 3-year plan inherently because you took care of trying to lock in enough to make sure you were set for year one, but you have allowed yourself the opportunity to focus on the other input areas of your operation and see how can we do some of those same things. As Michelle mentioned, you might have tied up a lot of cash in the process to do that, but then you look back at what cash do I have available and how do I start to structure the rest of my input needs along the way. I'd say you're already doing it and doing it in probably the best, most efficient way you'd want to. It's just maybe not formally thinking of it in that way.
To both of your points, it's a subtle way of me bringing in this, pulling in again, John, it's not necessarily that they need to learn how to do something new. They're doing it. So I offer myself up as a sacrificial lamb from time to time and to get the support from you guys on the business side of it is reinforcing, so that we want our listeners, our small growers, to understand that they're doing these things. Yes, this is a challenging environment. You may need to think about it more, give a little more thought to it, a little more discipline. I had a physical therapy session this morning and we were talking about our core muscles. And I said to my therapist, I can do planks, so my core is there, but I need to work on it. And she said, yeah, because you're lazy and you don't use your core when you should. Instead of using your back, use your core. So it's there, but you're not using it. And again, another analogy just to share with our listeners that there are different bite sizes that we can take out of this challenge. And again, I'm going to come down. My final comment is to just bring it back to Bridget's comment again. Once we understand what John and Michelle are telling us today, understand your costs, be disciplined, be purposeful. Then at the end, when you do know what it costs to produce the crop, then you need to set the price so that you stay in business.
You know, there is this inherent myth, I think, that exists out there that the only way you can do input strategies and play the game as we've started to describe it is you have to be a large operation. And I would actually argue that our smaller, medium-sized farms are a lot better at doing this, because inherently, especially as you're starting out and as you're smaller size, a lot of these operations tend to have to rely on their own cash streams to start out with. And as they start to build and get bigger, they're still relying on their own cash. There's financing opportunities out there. There's funds available. But I feel our small and our medium-sized farmers are a lot more cash conscious because they're a lot of their own money they're investing in this and they're building these operations, that they're a lot better at this inherently than what they give themselves credit for. And that because they're already doing these things, they don't necessarily realize it. It's almost second nature to them that they're already going through the process. Our larger farm operations maybe have more opportunities for quantity discounts and maybe more financing options because of those volumes. But when you think about the actual thought process, I tend to find that our small or medium-sized operations are really good at thinking through this. They just don't really formally think of it in the way of an actual planning process, but they do it inherently day in and day out as they're thinking about, and going back to the container example, you know, that decision to do that is out of necessity, and that necessity is a fundamental part of what goes into that planning process. And so I think it's something that our small and medium-sized farms need to give themselves a little bit more credit for, that they're probably positioned in a lot of ways to be better at this because of the position they're in, and can actually maybe achieve some better results because they have to think about it a little bit more forthright than I think some of our larger operations do with some of these other price tools that maybe are out there that they don't have access to.
That the smaller operators, especially as we're saying, break down your purchases when you can. You don't need to buy it all at once. We think of discounts often in quantity. If I buy more, I pay less. But as a small grower and someone who can purchase from different places or doesn't need a huge amount, if you need a huge amount, you've got to go to a big distributor to get it. But if you need a small amount, and there's overstock somewhere close by, or your neighbor has extra, you can pick off from different places and pull it together once you know, once you've made that plan and figure out exactly what you're looking for. And I was talking yesterday, and I was in Florida, and shipments, you know, used to only come to Florida once a week, and all of the growers would buy what they thought they needed. And everybody always guesses a little bit wrong. And so they had this agreement among themselves that if I overbought, I'd sell it to somebody else in the group for 10 cents over. And if you overbought and I underbought this week. And so the small people could buy from each other because those quantities made a difference. And so, again, I really think that the point here is, like Peter did, you sat down and you figured out how many containers you need. What do you need to make your business function? And then devise this plan instead of saying, I have to buy it all in fall to get this discount. Maybe I don't. And there are some unique places that I can purchase that somebody else can't.
Yep, I would agree with that. The especially the, as you mentioned, the idea of being able to kind of maybe shop around a little bit and see what other opportunities are out there. It's kind of the trap that some of our larger operations get into because, as you mentioned, to get the discount, they've got to buy in such large quantity. Well, if you're not in that situation, you've got a little bit more freedom, or in some cases a lot more freedom, to kind of see what's available out there in the market and take advantage of that. And if you're buying over time, you're definitely more able to really look at, well, what not only is what's going on in the market environment for what the cost of these inputs are, but what am I seeing in terms of opportunities from locations to buy from? Because that's been a big thing. We saw this last year that we saw a lot of different price levels for inputs from a local level based in some cases just purely on who had the actual product available. In some cases, it was what's the market doing? Well, if we're still concerned about that going into this next year, that's an opportune time to be able to say, well, what's going on from a market environment standpoint, and what's going on from a local standpoint? If I've got a lot of opportunities to buy from, I can kind of figure out what's the best opportunity. I've got my pricing target in mind. I've got the quantity I want to buy in mind on some of these other items. Now I can go out and say, where's my best opportunity to find that target by my decision deadline and secure that input? And for our small, medium-sized farms, because they're in that situation, that's where they've got that ability to be much more effective and more efficient in terms of securing those inputs at a really the lowest possible cost for them. And it's really just inherently because of the situation they're in that, again, they don't necessarily think of it that way because they think we have to buy on these large quantities. We're not a large farm. Well, that's not true. And that, Michelle, your example is extremely important to that. They've got great opportunities that they just need to maybe think about the fact that they're there and recognize that they are there.
You know, that's a great point, John, that you've brought up today, in that it's reinforcing that there is some efficiency at the small and medium size level. Michelle, you and I, haven't we, for the time we've been together, we've made the point that small operations are more nimble and it's easier to turn on a dime during a pandemic environment. So this, guys, this is like two different aspects where we're finding common ground and saying, yeah, the small grower, the medium-sized operation may actually not only be able to sustain and compete, but there might be some efficiencies and some advantages for us to help them recognize and capitalize on. This is all good stuff.
I had dinner last night with a distributor, and she said that the thing that helped her business survive during the pandemic was that she went in with no long-term contracts. It was just how her business had evolved. In the past, they had had contracts with their customers and vendors. They didn't have any long-term contracts. The pandemic showed up, and they weren't locked into prices on either end. They were able to adjust, and 2-3 years later now, the business has tripled in size. And so I think that the opportunity to hedge and to do all of these things is this huge advantage that big producers have, big everyone has. And sometimes it is the golden handcuff that locks you in at the time when you need to be most nimble.
You've helped me understand a little bit in this time together. Michelle's heard me say many times that I've over my career been able to sit confidently around a table with some of our largest greenhouse operations, because I've come to understand that our line items and our budgets are exactly the same, with perhaps maybe one or two items that they experience that I don't. The only difference is the number of zeros after the numbers. And I think what I've heard from you today that I hadn't thought of before is that we actually might be able to leverage and take advantage and say the fewer zeros we have, the more efficient we may be on some of these topics that we've discussed today. So I want to thank you for bringing that angle, that perspective to the conversation.
Well, you're very welcome. It's an important thing that I think we not overlook, because when we think about, like, right now we've got the USDA is doing their next census, the 2022 census. I continue to get emails on it all the time. And when we look back at the 2017 census, there are a lot more smaller farmers out there than there are large farmers, and they're successful and they're continuing to be successful. And I think it's because of some of the things we've been talking about today that they're inherently doing that makes them more nimble, makes them more effective. And we certainly saw that during the pandemic. We look at what happened when our grocery stores shut down and how some of these smaller markets just exploded. And many of them are continuing to do well because of some of the models that they already had in place, or that they were able to pick up because they were able to shift, because they weren't locked into contracts or weren't locked into situations. And I think that's an important thing for small and medium-sized farms to remember, is your business model is your business model because of what you've got a plan you're trying to achieve, and you've got flexibility within that plan that you're able to capitalize on. And you don't necessarily think about some of those, what those things are that you can capitalize on, but because you don't have some of these larger quantities that you're having to lock in, or these contracts you're locked into, and you've got the ability to kind of shift around some of your purchasing power to different places and take advantage of those opportunities, you've got more flexibility than what maybe you think you do, because we have this inherent thought that smaller means bad. And that's not really the case. In a lot of cases, smaller can mean better. And especially for the market you're in, what you're trying to do, there are certainly cases where the push for the market is to get bigger, but that's not every market. And so where you're in, small may be ideally positioned for what you want to do and where you want to be, because you can take advantage of doing things that really, as we've talked about, you're already inherently doing, but maybe not thinking about formally in a process. And that's really important, because we have so many small farms that are so vital to agriculture and to our food system. They've got the ability to be successful. They've been successful. And I want to encourage people to kind of look at it from that standpoint of, you've got things in your favor that you're maybe not thinking about that you can continue to capitalize on. And this idea of input purchasing is certainly one of those things that you want to pay attention to.
Well, here, here, John, I've had a career-long question. Why can't I be small and successful? And you've helped reassure me that, yes, there is a place for small and successful.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Grower and The Economist. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate it wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps us get discovered by new listeners. If you have questions, concerns, or would like to suggest a podcast topic, please email me at michelle@stratagerm.com. I love hearing from you. Until next time.